G'day everyone, welcome back to the show, and today we've got back to the show Greg Doyle. How you doing, Greg?
Good, thanks Pete, good.
Thank you so much for coming back on. I actually had a few requests to get your backside back on as quick as we can because people very much enjoyed you talking last time. Now, just for those who don't know of you, and this is probably, you know, if this is the first time they've seen this show, you're a Reiki master, astral traveler, and an author and experiencer. You've experienced a wide range of things. Would you be able to, I know there's lots to your story, and last time we covered a lot. So if people want to get right into your backstory, they can go back a few shows and check that out. But would you mind just sort of giving people a brief overview on yourself the best that you can, just sort of quick, I guess, a thumbnail sketch version?
Yeah, good idea. Well, basically, as I told you last time, but I think it is important in my story in that I came from around 16 years ago. I was just in a career, in a music career, in a classical music career, and was not at all interested in ET connections or astral traveling or energy healing. I wasn't not interested. It just wasn't on my radar. So from my point of view, it first started literally when a light came, woke me up. When I was asleep, took me down a wormhole to another planet. And it was so, so real. And I knew it was a pivotal turning point in my life. And that kind of began this whole journey, really confusing at first, of thinking, what's actually going on here? I was being taken out of my body by energies and by lights and by beings. And, you know, and I consider myself pretty down to earth, like yourself, really. I think that's what I think a lot of people appreciate is that if you're a down to earth kind of person, and then when something so dramatic as this changes your whole perspective on life, which it did, it kind of steered me from a career which was, and as you know yourself, you kind of, when you have situations like this, you realize what's actually more important in your life. Do you want to actually see what's going on, or do you want to just continue on a certain path, and you really can't turn back, can you?
You can't. And that's the thing that people don't get too, is that it's not easy. They think, oh, you know, this person's awake. They look at yourself or myself and go, oh, it must be unbelievable and unreal. And yeah, it is, but it's friggin' hard because every single paradigm of your world is tested, and it's really trying emotionally, hardcore at times, and mentally.
It is. I think you're right. A lot of people don't realize that because, you know, I get a lot of people, and it's great, a lot of contact from people since writing the book and being out there saying, oh, you know, yeah, you must be really lucky, you must feel really lucky, blah, blah, blah. And it is good. It's good. But at the same time, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. do you?
No, I've got no freaking idea. And that's why I do what I do and you do what you do.
And when you come to that realization, it's very liberating. And some people have got to realize when you just going with who you are, because essentially this whole process is, I think the process of enlightenment is actually just seeing what's there and seeing what is and following, just being yourself. But getting back to your question, it really was amazing. These astral experiences, like going to other planets, meeting beings, seeing myself in past lives or present lives, also not just as earthlings but as aliens, you know, and it the whole kind of, yeah, the whole platform of what we are, what actually are we, what are we made of, you know. I don't see myself as just human. I'm sort of more a what than a who. I'm sure you feel the same, and that is, by the same token, as you said before, immensely liberating. And at the same time, emotionally very confusing. The you know, because you start to trust things, you let go of old patterns, you move where you wouldn't think you'd move, but you go physically to live in places where you wouldn't necessarily think you would, and you just learn to go with that. But it's a roller coaster. It's exciting, as you know, that kind of life, and it's well worth it. And you know, I wouldn't give it back for anything. I'm glad I've had these experiences and have these experiences and I'm able to share these experiences with people, because it's obviously resonating with some aspect of people. Otherwise, no one would be watching these videos or listening to what we're saying and what we're writing. So from that point of view, it's a bit like a spiral, isn't it? You're getting closer and closer to your center and what actually is and the truth of the matter and being human, being earthly. You know, it's an amazing journey.
And it takes you down roads that you just, like the places I've gone and even the realms of thoughts and the experience I've had just keep taking you to the realms that you couldn't even make this stuff up. It just, the far outness, I guess, with all that that goes on. For yourself, have you come to a realization, like, I guess what you're saying is you've got to let go with a lot of this once you start unfolding it. Like, you can have the aspects of the 3D terms side of things overtake you and really get to you. But then with the experiences with the 3D, you know, we're here for that reason to you know, whatever each person's reason is being here, they've got that connection to the other side if they've got a conscious sort of connection with it, which I think we all do on some level, whether they want to realize it or not, a large majority of people. But you've got to learn to let go, don't you?
You really do. And also, you know, it sounds cliche, but you really do have to trust in that you will be okay on a physical level, whether that's, you know, financially or job-wise. Not long ago, someone contacted me and said, oh, you know, I've read your book and I envy you your experiences because you've been able to kick the door down. But what I pointed out to him, and there are very real steps people can do. Like I found there were really good kind of mantras. It's interesting for me because when I say mantra, it's more from the astral aspect. Like I feel myself as a series of cells. And when I sort of say a mantra, I kind of feel it permeate my whole being. You know, as you know, it's your whole being. It's permeated. And I was explaining this abundance one to him. And I said, look, forget how much the word has been flung around in the New Age circles. It's actually a really good word. And it's the feeling that we are everything we need. So the idea, and he said, yeah, I said, listen, when I started saying this, I woke up after an astral experience and I knew it even before my outside life, my 3D life had actually reflected that. You know, I was still doing work and stuff that I didn't want to do. But I knew that, I just knew that everything was there, as in like the universe, like every part, every cell, every atom in our body is a reflection of the universe, which has everything. You just know that. This incredible feelings you get when you're going astral, and like when you're meeting some of these beings, it's very ecstatic. It's fantastic, you know. And so I was telling him, he said, well, what actually do you do? And I said, well, when I'm driving to work, which I know is going to disappear, that particular job I was doing, which it did, I would give abundance give thanks. Or the feeling of gratitude, but not external. Once again, it's internalizing everything and actually feeling it. And I would feel really grateful for physical abundance or well-being, vitality, health, financial abundance. I know I have everything I need. And this was even before I felt that. But I just knew, not just to say it on an intellectual level or not just to read it somewhere, but to just feel it within me. I just knew that it was right, even though I had to get there. And I'd say these, you know, material abundance, everything I need to operate in the 3D world, creative abundance, abundance of connection with, you know, ET and other realms, you know, and just this feel, and it made me feel good. And I thought to myself, we're talking about trust before, but more and more, you just know what feels good, what feels right. And people say, oh, well, you know, oh, that's you know, oh, does it feel right to drink a hot chocolate? It's a different kind of thing to, you know, I want a craving. It's not a craving feeling. It's a feeling that it just sits with you. And I was saying to this guy, look, you really can alter the reality around you to fit yourself better. It's a little bit like refitting a glove. It's like the glove is there that you want, and you just got to slip your fingers into that glove little by little and feel the glove. So you, really it's about feeling the life you want and feeling your way into that feeling of abundance. And and as I said, it's a tricky word because a lot of people go, oh, that's a New Age concept. I said, well, it's just a feeling that you have everything, that you're not disconnected from what you need or what you want. Would you agree with that? It's just that.
I would. And this is something I've come to learn. I was doing similar stuff for years before I even, you know, started really having these experiences on a full-blown scale in recent years. And Solrita, who, you know, my partner, is very much in line with what you're saying. And she, you know, does these stickers and puts them on things for thanks for this and jars with writing in it. So we, you know, fill them up with money for what we need for the kids' schooling and whatnot. And everything is provided that we need. And I think once you understand that, not just understand, you know, see, a lot of people believe extraterrestrials exist or believe in spirit. I don't believe, I know. And that's a complete huge difference. And when you know that all is one consciousness interacting with itself. And from there, you realize how we're basically playing a cosmic joke with our brothers and sisters, which are really all cells of the same thing anyway. And you can see how, as an example, Sundays you'll be like, if I don't do this now, I bet you that's going to happen. And then you go, you don't do what you're going to do. And then what you knew was going to happen, happened. And these are not things, you know, that are trivial. These are things that really you've got to had some connection knowing that was going to happen. And you can say, oh, I know someone's going to open the door. But you don't know that if you've got the broom handle next to the window and something blows in and it's going to chip that glass or, you know, something stupid, you go, no, that's not going to happen. And just to piss you off, that does happen. Like on another scale, you knew this because of, and I'm just using a stupid, you know, reference here, but this is how so many times I've gone, if I should have freaking trust myself because I'm right a lot of the time. And when you're not, I still work out that you are right because you've learned a lesson from it or an understanding concept. And you look back going, if these things didn't happen the way it did, not even with learning about abundance and other things, and I think it's something that a lot of experiences, in which we all really are, go through, which is learning about what you're talking about, trusting in the universe, knowing that everything's going to be provided for and getting past all that crap, which I think we still have every now and then. You've got these sort of flickers of doubt come in, part of the human experience. But I think once you get past all that, this is where it goes to you. You know that your reality is an illusion through a different series of vibrations. And therefore, if you know that, and once you start to really tune into it and really know it, you can manipulate it. But at the same time, you're interacting with yourself, which has got split off, you know, all cells of their own reality they're trying to create. And this is where things fit in or they completely don't. But there's always a lesson with it. So with the abundance type thing, I really do get that. And I hope this sort of is something that helps people with what you're saying, because I really do see what you're saying, and it does help people once they can sort of not believe it, you know it when they're doing this type of thing.
You've nailed it with the knowing. This is the thing, and that's what I found from my story, that this whole astral awareness just altered how I see myself, how I interact with the world, and it's not a belief, as you say, you know it. And I had, and people like some, just the other week I was speaking in this group of people, and they're into, you know, being conscious and stuff. And I said, listen, a lot of the, and you can see it in their eyes. I said, a lot of the experiences I've had in the astral, I won't necessarily share with that particular group because of the resistance in their worldview kind of thing. And I know that they can't, and why should they believe what I'm saying if they haven't experienced it? And my whole thing is go out and experience it yourself. You know, you want to get to the point where you know it yourself. So, you know, there are certain things they can do, you know, looking for connection with other entities and realms and astral traveling that will actually help people know. And that's the best thing I find. Like I've had a girl who came to a course in Melbourne, and she had a full-blown conscious out-of-body experience, and it just changed her. I might have told you this last time, but wow. And just to see the change, and you could just see it in her cells. You could just see she knows it. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. It's almost like it really is a form of awakening, these kind of experiences into other realms, because you actually in the end feel so much more connected to life. Even though in the beginning I felt very disconnected from this realm, and in the very beginning I was really confused. I thought, what's going on? I just want to get home. I want to get out of my body. And like Moni, my wife now, she said at the time, she was very accepting, but she just thought I was very absent. You know, I was just coming home. I didn't want to be here. And it was, as you say, in a roller coaster. In the beginning, it was like, well, I don't know how to integrate this into my life, because this is so much more real, these experiences. They're just beautiful. They're genuine. There's just no bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
No ego. It's just, you seem to be going into this state that's just, wow. I was just so blown away. And over time, little by little, you start to realize that actually this state, you can really enjoy, like the cosmic joke, as you say, with our brothers and sisters, you can kind of enjoy this 3D game, not to put it down by calling it game, not putting it down at all, but you kind of enjoy it more without being so attached to it, without getting so kind of offended by it.
It's a perfect word, and I've been using that with my partner a lot lately. I've just been, because since being with Soul, my life's just, it's been so much more fuller with kids and people I thought I'd never meet, and even the experiences and everything is upped, and all that's happened for a reason. But what I've learned is I need to even more detach from the emotion, not to be like a robot, but emotional and what other people are doing, and not be judgmental. And once you have the experiences we've had, you when you're in the other realms and you experience this unboundedness, you can't, love and orgasms and all that don't even compare. Like, love is actually like a tiny word that doesn't even come close to what you actually feel and what you're experiencing. But it's like knowing that and then coming back here, like you said, not putting it down, but you've got, like, in my terms, I've got to learn to detach from a lot here and go, all right, well, I'm here to be in service to the best that I can. And I know this through my experiences, which I think a lot are here to do, but you start to enjoy it more. You start to not take everything to heart, and then you go, this is their journey. You sit back and sort of laugh at some of the stuff going on. You're just like, shit, this is what I've been dealing with the wrong way for so long, that now I've just got to sort of sit back and just chill about it.
Mate, that is such a great point. I'll tell you a classic example, because, as you know, I was living in Spain for the last 2.5 years or so before moving here. And, you know, once again, it was following that weird string, you know, why am I there, bizarre area. Anyway, one night they had these things on the beach, because we're near the beach, and they're called chiringuitos. They're like little bars. They're really nice. They put out, you know, like, these little lamps and candles, and people sit on the beach in the evening and have a beer or whatever and a snack. And I was there, got to know a French girl, and we're sitting there, there would have been about half a dozen of us. And she's very reactive. But she was a seeker, you know, she was someone who was on the path looking for greater self. And we're on the beach just chilling, and she says to me, you know, many years ago, whatever, before she had kids, whatever, she said, you know, I survived a suicide attempt. And she was really going into the suicide thing really seriously and talking about this, her suicide attempt, and it didn't work. And then she tried again. And on the beach, I was listening to her. And as I was doing it, all of a sudden, unforgivably, I felt this kind of belly rumble of a laugh coming up. It was unconscionable, really. And she started telling me about this terrible situation. And I just started, and then I just started to smile, and I just started to laugh. And she looked at me in shock. And I thought, because a while ago, and I actually talked about that a little bit in my book, how this, like, there was a Buddha in the belly. It was like there was a being in there, just the worst possible situations, you know. Someone would be going, oh, this is terrible, terrible, terrible. And I'd just be sort of there going, oh, yeah. And anyway, I started this laugh. Then all of a sudden, she was looking at me in absolute shock after recounting these terrible. And then she just started to smile, and she started to laugh herself. And then the whole group just started to roar laughing at kind of the, it was kind of a not just at the insidiousness of it, it was kind of laughing at the ridiculousness of the whole thing, like that a being could take their life. Now, once again, out of context, that makes it, that's a terrible thing you did, you know, laughing at someone who had an unfortunate situation. But it was just an energy that came through me and sort of went around the group. And we just had a good laugh, and that was that. It was a really bizarre situation. I find that that's often, you know, You know, people are going, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible, this is terrible. And you just find yourself grinning. And this is what you talk about not being reactive.
No, I've been like that for quite some time where at the wrong time, and people go, how can you laugh about that? And I'm like, how can't you? And then it's sort of a similar thing. It's almost like a bug. People catch it and go around, and they sort of detach themselves. I know exactly what you're saying, and some people might be going, you heartless bastards. But when you're in that state, and that happens. I'm quite known for being the laughing Buddha, they call me sometimes, because I just piss myself off, and I can't help it. I think it's just...
Yeah, it comes from somewhere else, doesn't it? It's sort of deeper, and you know by the laugh. And as I say, I kind of like... Well, if you take it out of context, it sounds terrible. Of course, the whole subject of suicide is absolutely incredibly sad. But it's just this whole idea that the laugh comes from within you, and it's just kind of... Yeah, you know it's okay. It's like... connecting with her at that time was saying, in essence, it was a healing energy. It was like, we're all one. We never die. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and even letting herself off the hook, I think, a little bit, because obviously it was an issue within her. And the fact that she raised it in a situation that wasn't like, was more of a party vibe. Yeah. So it's interesting that sometimes people come out with these terrible things when it's not really appropriate. And then they transform it within that circle, like that circle transformed it. So it ended up being good, and she was fine.
Yeah, and these are things that happen when unexpectedly, and especially around certain groups of people. It's almost like how with the crafts that I see sometimes, there's certain people that they will see this stuff with me, and then sometimes it won't. And it's because your energies are right for how things happen with certain groups, I guess I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And it's how everyone's processing stuff too. Yes. With your astral experiences, what's been some of the types of beings that you've seen yourself as or interacted with? If there's any reference you can use, describe me. I know that there's some stuff that you can't, in terms of there's just no freaking way to describe some stuff, no matter how articulate you are. But are you able to go into some of that?
Yeah. Well, the first time... there's been a few. One of them I saw myself, it was like a past life experience where, you know, it was like a regression kind of thing where you had slideshows, you know. And this was before I believed in past lives. So I saw myself as, you know, or concurrent lives, whatever you want to call them, but other lives. Mm-hmm. But I saw myself as what you perceive as human beings. But then it was like that the fourth one in that particular row was an alien. So I was actually looking like I'm looking at you, but in 4D, mm-hmm. more realistic, kind of a longish head, bulbous at the back. It was sort of like nothing like a grey, mm-hmm. but kind of, you know, a very narrow kind of head, but going right out the back. Fascinating. And so real. And I saw the whole kind of upper body kind of a darkish color. And I knew that, plus the eyes had, during this whole past life regression, the eyes were always the same. And I knew it was kind of like my consciousness at that time when I saw it was inside it as well. And I knew that that was me. And I thought it was a bit of a shock to the system, because not only had I not really, I hadn't not believed in you. I just hadn't thought of UFOs. As a little kid, I used to build them out of Lego. I used to build these Lego things, and when I spin them, they looked like a UFO. Mm-hmm. And I was little, and I was obsessed with building UFOs. Funny, huh?
Yeah, that's trippy, yeah.
And it is, and when I think of that ET, and then on that particular subject of building UFOs, another one was small, androgynous looking, bald, had a silver bodysuit, and knew me very well. This is one I used to meet. And this was more in a dream state, but I used to meet this, so it wasn't conscious, it wasn't an astral, and then this particular being would then take me into an astral state. It would wake me up, mm-hmm. in the dream, wake me up, and I'd go totally conscious. In these experiences, I'd be shown very modern devices, like instruments of some kind, maybe energetic things of some kind. And it's funny, I think the direction... like as yourself, you think, where is this all going in this lifetime? It's kind of exciting. But I think looking at finding a way to enhance. Like, I feel I'm at some stage you're going to build some kind of astral dome building with a certain way that will make it easier to project, and that other people can project as well. So just enhancing that energy. And I've been shown a lot of modern technology, but I don't know what that means yet. It's interesting.
Yeah, I guess similar sort of stuff. I've been doing blueprints on some friggin' healing device that I don't even have a clue how the friggin' thing works, but I've got
You've downloaded the print.
Yeah, I've actually done like a whole thing on it on Microsoft, and I've sent it to Mary and Barry and a few people, and I did it in a few minutes, and I'm like, I don't know what the hell. And Barry's like, you know, Barry Littleton I've had on the show, he's telling me what it is, and he's like, you've worked on this in the other planes, and I'm like, well, I've got no freaking idea. So
I reckon that'd be right. I think that's what we're all gravitating toward. I think there's kind of a meeting of energies and intelligences and technology. I think it actually is going somewhere. Very concrete. That's my feeling, and that kind of relates a bit to your question. Like, that was, those particular aliens used to take me out of my dreams, but they looked the same in the dream as when they were out of the dream. So I thought that's interesting. They could come into my dreams, take me into a conscious astral state, and be the same, look the same. I thought that's fascinating. And in the dream, they'd say, you know, like, Greg, they'd say my name, Greg, we're going to show you something, and you know, and then I'd wake up. When people go, well, what do you mean you woke up? Well, I'd wake up in my mind, but no, I'm in bed. And then the vibrations would begin, the astral vibrations. So that's one way I was taken out. So it appears ETs do have the, call them what you want, interdimensional beings, you know what I mean? Mm. Not human beings as we know, have the capacity to reach into energy fields and communicate and take us places. I mean, interact with us. It is amazing. So there's been those ones. It was also, I used to go onto ships early on. There were tall white ones, very tall, over 7 foot, pretty austere, only used telepathy, very kind of metallic, kind of a gray, dull metallic ships, not many objects on the ships, just, and these places, I mentioned this last time, didn't pick up a great vibe. It was the feeling from these people that they were using our energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was fascinating. And they fed us food, lots of tables, a lot of people walking in like zombies, a lot of humans. I used to see these ships before I went on them, and they were huge ships. I used to be taken out of my body by a different kind of signal. It was like, screeching jet kind of thing. They were interesting. So they were tall, white skinned, white haired, weird eyes, but they weren't physically aggressive or intimidating. They were big, but they just used to, they were in control, you know. Mm-hmm. Then you've got beings who look like humans. I used to go to astral elevators that used to appear in my bedroom, and eyes would look at, like, I go up different levels. I'd get in this elevator. Rather than a wormhole, right? I get in the elevator, I go up a level, and then a little slit would open and eyes would look at me. And then I go up another level, then maybe a couple of pairs of eyes would be looking at me. And you keep on going up and up. I used to come out of this room where there'd be a table, and it was like a rectangular table, and we'd be sitting around it, and they all looked humanoid, but it was telepathic once again. And everybody spoke. Like, it was pretty bizarre. I met with them quite a bit. We all spoke on subjects from our planets. I had the feeling these people were not from the Earth, but they looked like us. Well, like us, but without any ego whatsoever. So I guess what we're aspiring to, or what is happening to us anyway, by burning off the crap, you know, becoming who you really are and just not giving into the illusion. But these people were amazing. That they made it. They sort of had a big effect on me. They spoke on issues from their planets that, to be honest, like you were talking about the concept of love before, I had no idea what they're talking about. It was going into me, but I had no idea. It was so complex. Then I found, when my term came, they were watching very intently, and I spoke very clearly, and this was years ago, about the lack of transparency in our systems, and that we have all the food, all the energy we need, but it's being suppressed, it's not being shared. And I just spoke very eloquently through my mind to them, and it kind of came out of me, but I had no idea what I was going to say next. I didn't prepare it. It was like they drew the energy out of me. I met them a few times, and in the end, I was really sad to go. I liked them. They weren't smiley people, but they were empathetic. I remember they looked very closely at me, and we really communicated through the eyes. That was very much the feeling of the eyes, you know. And I at that point, I'd been astral traveling a bit, and I was holding onto a chair. I said, I'm not going back. And I hadn't really integrated a lot of this stuff with 3D, so I was pretty anti-3D at this stage. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not going back. And they said, you are, but it's okay. You'll be coming home soon, they said. And it was a feeling of, I don't know, they're like our brothers and sisters, but whether they put a human form on to not freak me out.
Well, that's what I've tended to have with not all, but some of the beings.
Yeah, so, I think there was a bit of that.
And I think
that's a good point.
Like, it's something that some people will go, well, that's deception, you know, but, well, at the same time, if it hasn't happened the way it has for myself with a certain being, I wouldn't have got, like, if it was how it was straight up, it would have blew my mind. I would have had no reference, and it would have just, I would end up in the mental ward, to be quite frankly, I think. Yeah. Because looking back now, I go, oh, this is how it had to happen for me to be able to grasp and understand, and the education in the human body computer, I got to understand where it went. So, and this is where, you know, people go, well, how do you know, good or bad or self-service or whatever? And you go by the fruit from the experience. I do. And this is where, like you say, you know, you just know. And that's where you can't question that type of thing. So these beings were basically saying you'll be back with them soon.
It was a feeling of coming back home. So it was a feeling of whether or not I agree with you too. I think that if it hadn't happened the way it had, like the very first experience I had, I'll get back to that, but the very first experience when I went down this wormhole was the first one I had. It was quick. And I came out in the atmosphere of another planet. These buildings were seriously not Earth. The planet wasn't Earth. The buildings were very, very modern, very big, very real. Lights on, lights off, massive amounts of windows. It was very much a technological world, but I knew it wasn't Earth, at least now. But I had the very strong feeling it was another planet. So that was how they started. First they show me another planet. Then I see myself as an alien. Then there's this alien taking me out a fair bit. Then I notice that every time I'm going flying in the astral, I look at my ankles and there's actually this translucent being carrying me who's not earthly and speaks like through an electrical kind of transponder in some voice that the words I don't understand, but I understand the intent. So more and more they were feeding me the line, you know, this is how it is, but it's a gentle way in. I mean, I think if I was sitting around the table with people looking like some out of Star Wars, you know, all different, I think I probably would have just been looking at them going, wow, 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 not actually taking anything, I'd just be too freaked out. You just abort the experience. So little by little, I learned to be non-reactive in the astral, so that I don't abort. If you get too excited in the astral, you get too excited, you'll go back into your physical.
You get ripped back, yeah.
You get ripped back. So you really learn, and it's like even today, I'm in a pretty quiet mood, and like some of my old friends would say, oh, Greg, you know, you're not really jumping up and down today. And I said, well, you okay? And I go, I'm actually really well. I'm just in a quiet mood. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like that. You just learn to be, as you say, less and less and less reactive. Getting back to your alien thing, there was also, yeah, this idea of coming home, as they said to me, right? I was once blasting out, and I found myself, I learned to back away astrally from the Earth. I'd actually back away to keep my eye on the Earth so they wouldn't go into another dimension. And you could actually see the energy around the Earth like pulsating in bands. And I remember one stage, I was about the distance of the moon looking back at the Earth, and I actually thought, oh, wow, the Earth's in pain. The Earth's actually struggling. And I could feel it. It wasn't like reading it in a book. I knew that, you know, I thought, wow, this is education. This is a real education, actually sensing the Earth struggle. Anyway, I remember going away once, and I went past all these planets, and I came to the asteroid belt. I might have mentioned this last time. There was little triangular craft that were parked up against the asteroids. And when I say little, of course, I was honing in on it. That'd be quite big, but they weren't massive ships. And I had the strong feeling they're protecting. I thought, well, and I had the feeling they're protecting us. I thought, that's interesting. There's physical triangular metallic ships protecting the Earth. And then there was this massive ship going past. It was a white ship. It had stenciled military. Did I tell you about this last time?
No,
I'm not sure.
I think you did.
Yeah, and it was a massive ship. It was like a big mothership. And it had stenciled writing on it. It was white. It looked like, almost like an enormous whale, if you know what I mean. Like, but huge ship.
Like a big teardrop?
And they're running. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was massive compared to what was around, and they're just cruising. I mean, whoa! And once again, you're led to these experiences. Like in the astral, I learned, like, my idea was to go and have a look at the Earth and check out what's going on, but I was led to the asteroid belt and to see the asteroids. I mean, I just say to you casually, I was at the asteroid belt, but I mean, to see these in ultra high 4 definition, these asteroids. Wow. And then to see this, and then I hadn't even thought, and then my vision went in onto these triangular craft, and this big one coming, the writing on it was kind of stenciled, like a little bit like a military, but it was lines and kind of circles and curves.
I can sort of see it in my head now. I've got an idea of what you're saying. Yeah.
And I knew at the time, and as I said, this was early, I wasn't into the whole New Age whatever thing, but I knew it was a Galactic Federation ship. Mm-hmm. I knew it was some kind of Galactic Federation ship. It was something, some kind of Federation. And I felt myself, I got really excited when I saw the ship. And I was trying to remember the exact stenciling on the side of the ship. I remember approximately how it looked, but it wasn't any earthly language that I can relate to. It was more made of circles and lines and curves, you know, that sort of modern kind of, yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Whatever that is. And I came away, I was shocked. And once again, I was reacting because I saw, I just went, whoa. But as I was drawn back to my body, I found myself asked the question. I heard my voice say, why are we not known to you as a planetary collective? You know, of course, there are those areas, you know, the secret areas that know all about this, but why don't we know? And as I was pulled back in my body, I heard a male voice through my head say, because you continue to kill your own. And I had the feeling as I woke up, I thought, okay, so there's like a certain set of galactic laws. Maybe when a planet reaches a certain stage of evolution, you may be invited on a more planetary level, like you know. And at the moment, we have a lot of connection with ETs, with our military and secret services. But this kind of thing was different. It was like, we are protecting you from. You know, I thought, that's interesting, they're protecting us. That means there's something to protect us from. So I thought, okay, there are obviously some ETs that are not that evolved. But it was a feeling that, yeah, we just haven't reached that stage yet.
And, you know, what I understand from these beings too is that they, once I got into the deeper depths of where this all goes, and I still don't know where, you know, it goes, because I understood that they were still learning about Source and the other universes and the other sort, whatever people want to term it as yeah. Well, but these things were how far, like, were what people would reference above angelic type things, which I still had no friggin' reference for, and still it's hard to really describe it. But they understand that this is even them themselves, so they understand that we're a facet of them also partaking in this. So it's really it's them that's responsible for this on another level of consciousness as well. Like they get the joke side of it, like this is actually us doing it. And it's almost like Source has had to do this itself to evolve. It's like it's had to put restraints and lessons for us to go to the next level, and then it happens again. It's almost like it creates this to grow. And then when it regenerates, these are lessons it's not going to have to learn again, but there's going to be new ones because things will be done completely differently from the way it's been sort of referenced to myself. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I always think that's an interesting word, the word lesson, because you think of school, and you also think of the word lessening, like you're lessened. It's true. I think that's the prohibitions, if you like, or there's certain barriers. Yeah, that's what lessening does. It puts you in a certain evolutionary kind of brick wall at that particular point. And I also think I totally agree with you. A lot of people say, "Oh, but obviously we don't get to discover time travel; otherwise, there'd be people coming back." And I say, "What do you think? What do you think's going on? There's a lot of stuff going on. There is so much stuff going on."
Well, that's what blew me out. Was in time learning that some of these beings, like not some, they all exist at the exact same time. But then, for example, with the Pleiadians or the Plejarans, they are us in the future. Yeah, and they're a collective of many things. So it's like, where do you think they're from? And then you understand that some of them are back in time, if we think of time, but it's still happening at the same time. So these are things where you never stop learning from it. And I think, you know, as I've said to people, they're like, well, why do we do all this? And what's the use of leaving Source and this and that? And it's like, well, if you're not understanding at least a small grasp of what I understand or what my concept is, even if you don't believe it, but just for a second, believe that you do not die and you go from life to life to life, even though they all coexist at the same time, experiencing life and gaining knowledge is how it was revealed to me. And my experience has to be completely different from yours to basically get a database on this. It has to like do everything in every single possible way, good and bad, if we want to perceive it that way. So it can, when it regenerates, grow. And that's like, whether it's the artificial intelligence or archonic or reptilian type natures, that not all reptilians are bad, but these are all other projections of us. That's weird part and wonderful part.
It is, and it's like we're all little, and not to put a negative stand on it, but it's like we're all little probes, you know, we're all little probes out there collecting data for the source, which we are also. And don't you find more and more when you're on this kind of road to enlightenment, like it sounds cliche, but it's true. When you actually talk to someone else, and actually look into their eyes, you actually see yourself more and more in people. And you actually realize you're kind of invisible. I've realized more and more, like when I'm in a room with people, I realize that my perception of life, my life, is in fact in the 3D, is in fact all those people around me who I'm interacting with. And if you think of it, you don't really see yourself. When you're looking at them, that's who you are. Mm-hmm. And by the same token, they are also within you. It's just this feeling of, you know, and of course it's the great rabbit hole. You can go every way, but just this feeling of knowing that we are absolutely connected, and that's more and more that I think when someone follows the path of integrity and just being yourself, and as you say, having awareness and contact and these inter-realm experiences, you just start to realize that you know that you're never going to die in it. And that puts a beautiful sunny slant on everything. Like rather than getting offended or taking personal things that happen in 3D, you really appreciate, like even now as I'm talking to you, I'm looking out because I'm having to hide from the construction out the front. I'm looking out the window and I see these beautiful trees and just a bit of sun off a leaf. And to me, that is so close to ecstasy. You know, it's just this, the feeling that, wow, we really are all connected. And it's a funny thing on this level we're talking about connectedness. Had some friends there the other day, and this little kid, he rode down on his bike. He was very young, really little kid, about 4. And he rode directly over a plant and just sat on the plant on his bike. And I just thought, and I'm not you know, I'm not vegan. You know, I eat less red meat than I used to, but like I'm not. But I just said to him, and I meant it. I just looked at him. He just looked at me because he's a kid. Yeah. Anyway, I just said to him, you know, you know, you're hurting that plant. Like, and he just saw it in my eyes. Like I meant it. That moment, I was kind of. I wasn't having a go at him for being a naughty boy. Nothing to do with that. And he just looked at me and he just understood, in that split second, he understood exactly what I was on about. You know, that you don't deliberately put your bike, you know. And I thought I was a bit harsh by saying that, but it was just a feeling of at that time connection. And it wasn't a feeling of judging him like I wouldn't judge myself as a kid. I did some pretty shocking things as a kid. That's not the issue. I mean, more and more you realize we're all perfect. And when you act from the heart, it's a perfect interaction. So I don't know, it was just a very interesting feeling of like at that moment, that was the most important thing on the planet was just to treat that plant with a bit of love. And it's a little bit like what you're saying before, on the subject of love. These feelings, you know, in these other realms, it's just so overblown. It's just so wow. And more and more I realize that we're fed a bit of a lie on the love thing. If you think of it when you're a kid, you know, your mum says, you know, be a good boy and I'll give you an ice cream, or well done and now I'll give you that. And that's conditional love. And then you think, well, conditional love is a misnomer. It can't exist. It's like saying hard water. I mean, love is love. It can only be given without condition, otherwise it's not love. And I guess, you know what I'm saying? Like even in the education system, it's like you have a reward system. Be a good person, do as we say, and we'll love you. And that's where the rot sets in.
It does.
When you're in these other realms, of course, you have none of that. It's just this incredible flushing of pure unadulterated love. And you come out of it in the beginning, you think, what was that? And then people say, how can you say it's love in the universe? Well, because it bloody is love in the universe, because that's where you experience it. And I can see, you know, the connection, you know, the whole idea that the way the whole sex thing has, it should be that, you know, that there is a connection, a union kind of thing. But even if you look at the scientists, they call it the Big Bang. That's kind of denigrating. I've always thought that's almost like celestial pornography, you know, the Big Bang. That takes all the love out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No, you reckon?
I reckon it's a complete load of crap from what I've seen. Like a lot of this is created by beings, like creator beings, projection of thought, and it's almost like you get it to a level or there's a certain races of beings that they just do this. This is what they do. And it's not what we're told or led to believe, which is sort of leading you down the garden path so you don't learn about this other, you know, knowledge, whether it's esoteric or interdimensional or otherworldly knowledge. So on that note, definitely, I do see what you're saying about the Big Bang and that.
Yeah, it's very subtle. Education is a very subtle thing, and it's about as subtle as a sledgehammer if you really look at it. Sledgehammer full front onto the face. It's the more and more you look at it, and as we're doing now, rather than gasping, we're giggling, and that's how it should be, because it is part of the great cosmic joke. And you know, we're in the end, we've got to learn to be kind of gentle with ourselves, and as we wake up, just do it gently, you know, enjoy it and see it for what it is. And there is a lot of humor attached to it, even though a lot of people think the world, you know, is in a terrible state and all that. But you think really of just the beautiful things, like as I was saying before, just a bit of sun reflecting off a leaf can make you feel so good, or just hearing some music, or right now I can hear a little bit of construction, but not too much. But I mean, generally, okay, in the sounds of nature, you hear a lot of beauty. You can hear the construction.
No, I can't really hear it on this.
Oh, that's
end.
Great. And but even then, I was just listening. I thought, even in the sounds of man-made things, that we would think, oh, that's not very nice. That's not very natural. There's still beauty in it. there's still beauty in everything. And, you know, and a lot, there's a lot of emphasis put on the human as a sufferer. And if you think, okay, if you just get out of that intellectual headspace for a while and think, okay, it's like the weekend before last. I mean, this is a low level of suffering, but we had a flood come through because I'm on a creek in Brisbane. Came through, and the guy next door in the rain, I thought, I'm fine, I'm on computer writing and it's raining. I thought it's okay. In summer, the creek never came up too high, no problem. He said, you better move that deck of yours out on the river because it'll get swept away, your tables and chairs. I'm, nah. Anyway, I go in the backyard and it's got about 6 inches to go, and I think, okay, bring it all in under the house. Then he says, you better put your mower up on something because it's going to come under the house. So, nah, yeah, I put it right up high. And then before, in about 15 minutes, the whole river comes in, and underneath the house is like the washing machine's floating, the couch is floating, everything's just floating. I had to lock it all up. Anyway, so the next couple of days, we had to get a high-pressure hose and put out all the mud. And a lot of people were saying, you poor thing, what'd you lose? Well, put the heaters in the sun for a few days, and they're okay. Lost an old stereo system. Anyway, in the end, it was a positive experience. People go, what do you mean a positive experience? There's so much destruction and you've still got a lot of mud in the yard and, you know, and you're really tense that night. I said, yeah, I felt pretty sick that night when the water was rising, you know, but when it went down again, I thought, great. I thought, as a human being, and once again, this is very low-level suffering, I appreciate that compared to what some people are experiencing, but it was a good experience. You know, sure, I had to clean up the next few days, whatever. My plans had changed, whatever. You know, it was kind of fun. Put us out, lost a few things. And as I said, it's a low level. But then I think back to times when, you know, you're a kid and I remember my stepfather was pretty savage physically, you know, when he got angry with us. And I think to myself, you know, did I actually suffer? Like, you know, I was hurt physically and repeatedly, but I suffered more in that moment. I felt the absence of love from him. But the funny thing is, when I had these experiences, started having these actual experiences, I started really thinking about my life a lot and sending a lot of healing to myself and even as a kid. And when I was overseas at the time, then when I met my stepfather, I hadn't seen him for a while, the first thing he did was apologize to me. I thought, this is interesting. I haven't spoken on these issues with him. I've worked it out in myself because my whole worldview has changed from what was going on. He comes to me and says, I'm sorry for that. And I thought that's interesting because I thought, wow, because I remember I was going through thinking, well, did I actually suffer as a kid? You know, because people said, you poor kid being abused. And I thought, not from the physical. That in many ways, sure, I wasn't killed. But is that suffering as well? When someone dies, I don't see dying as suffering. I think it would be terrible, of course, to be in a lot of physical pain, whatever. But I think more suffering is an emotional thing. I think suffering is the feeling of being disconnected or separate from. I think as a kid, I felt separate at that time. And the reason I say this is another astral experience. Early on, very early on in my astral experiences, I was meditating and I heard a female voice very clearly say, and I was totally wide awake, said, there is only joy. And I remember at that time thinking, bullshit, there's only joy. What a lot of codswallop. What a lot of crap. Think of all the images we see on TV. Think of all the fear that's fed to us on TV for a reason, of course. But, you know, there's always the feeling of suffering. Like you turn the news on, it's just some random story. Someone was killed. Someone here has been taken into hostage. Could be a terrorist, teenager, a terrorist. And it's just this... The human saga is once again suffering, always suffering. You know, of course, the sun on the leaf there is never going to be reported on the news. I might take a photo of it and send it in to some of the commercial news stations and ask if it can be headlined. But I guess what I'm alluding to is, in a roundabout fashion, when I heard that voice say there is only joy, it was overwhelming because it was a definite voice and I was with it. It was not my own head. It was a voice. And I knew that on a certain level, my life would be about proving that. My life would be about proving that there actually is only joy, you know? And I think a lot of the suffering that people take on is the perceived suffering of others. You know, we're taught that, for instance, not to get too religious, but Jesus suffered on the cross for you, you know, for your sins. You're fed pictures as a little kid. I remember being fed pictures as a little kid of starving people in Africa, being fed images of, because my stepfather was Irish, so he always had the TV on about the bombings in Ireland, because he's very, you know, anti what was going on there. So I remember crying physically when I saw images of war as a kid. So when I look back, I knew deep down that something wasn't right. Not only, of course, the war was wrong, as it of course is, but I knew deep down that these images of suffering we're always fed with kind of is a deliberate act in keeping you in a place of feeling you're the lucky ones. Do as we tell you. You know, obey in many ways, because look at them. They're suffering.
It's almost the parents saying you don't get this ice cream if you don't do this scenario.
Absolutely. Well put. It is so that. And it's about as subtle as a sledgehammer if you really look at these things. You know, and then I was so shocked when you travel to a third world country and meet someone who has very little on material level. And when I first met some people in Indonesia who had been absolutely ravaged by what, you know, floods and stuff, the smile in their eyes absolutely shocked me. I thought they've got something that we don't have back in Australia. There's some spark. And I realized then, and this is once again, you know, out of context, not to belittle suffering, not to belittle what people go through, but I knew that there was something going on that wasn't that subtle. We were kept in place. The ice cream thing is perfect. That's exactly what it is. And all this is part of kicking the door down. Because someone said, "How do you kick the door down?" Part of it is seeing what is there. Enlightenment means seeing what is. That's the definition of enlightenment. Seeing what is there and not being reactive to it on a level that will hurt you. So not being overly obsessed in conspiracy theories, because it's actually conspiracy, not conspiracy theory. And then when you go beyond that, it's actually pretty clear. Things that people call conspiracy theories are actually very clear. You look at, you can research it and you'll see.
It's not theory, it's conspiracy.
Not theory. And it's not even that well hidden. So people have to, this is the great kind of balancing act of 3D life. And this is what they call dualism, is that we live this 3D life where we have to interact in circumstances that are sometimes already present. You know, it's not just you, you're interacting. But by the same token, we know that we're perfect beings. And we know that it's a cosmic joke. And we know that we are all one. And so more and more, what I say to people is when they say, "Oh, you know, you shouldn't mention that about that because that's a conspiracy, that's going to be negative." And I say, whoa. No, we're seeing what actually happened and why we've become this way. And that then you realize, oh, you look back in education and you realize what you thought you were, the sum of what you thought you were, isn't actually you. And it's like the sum of what society thinks it is actually isn't society. They're much, much more. And then when you learn not to react to that, not to take it into yourselves, just to see what is, but recognize you actually feel really good no matter what's going on, you know? Like when this flight was happening, I was feeling sick and all this, but I actually felt good. And in so many situations where, you know, I should be feeling shit or some terrible thing has happened, I reach inside, I feel good. And I know that it's that Buddha in the belly, you know, or the laughing Buddha that is within you reminding you that it's all a joke. And you're actually not in a denigrative way, but in a good way. It's all good.
Sounds similar to like I've had my good friend Giles, who I lived with for a while up in Queensland. He talked and done compassionate meditating, where okay. It was like 10-day retreats they did, and a lot of this goes into basically observing what sensations are you getting and being non-judgmental and reactive to this, which gets you to that. Basically, you're chasing nirvana again, that state, which we can all get. And from that state, you can basically do what you're saying. It's like looking at this non-reactive, but it's getting to that state from it. And, you know, a lot of the time I'm learning, I'll go on Facebook, you know, post a show or some footage I've got, and I'm learning from people about the terrorist attack stuff going on, you know, or so-called plot in Melbourne or what. And I'm living here. I've got no frigging idea until days later what's going on here apparently. But it's because what's happened is that is all the newspaper. That's another reality to me while I'm coexisting with it. And again, it's choose your reality. So if you want to see suffering or whatever, yes, that's going on and it's as real as my reality. But that's why when you see some of these third world people, they're just as enlightened as anybody you can think of, because though they're going through that, they know the true nature of reality. And it's not like we talked to somebody about Bali, and they were saying, look, the Balinese people are really peed off about what happened. I didn't even know what happened there until days later again that the executions take place. Yeah. And they're saying, look, we didn't want that. And they're saying, like, the Balinese people, full stop, didn't want this, but it was the structure there that they've got that done this. You know, and you got the Hindu population or whatever they've got going on there, they're against this. But yet, this is what's shown on, literally, the movie screen, as David Icke calls it, in terms of the public domain with mainstream media and everything else. So this is where, choose your reality. Yes, these other realities are going on. People are being murdered, all the bad stuff. But like you said, what about the star or the sun hitting that leaf, you know? And what about the individual beautiful experiences we're all having individually each day? What about the good things? You know, it's like as if we are programmed within this program when we come here to have this experience that anything that's so-called negative has to be higher on the agenda for your attention rather than anything that's not.
Yeah. That's right. And look, I see it as it is a deliberate action to keep people submissive and you know, the ice cream theory, as you said before, do as we say kind of thing. So I see it all as a bit boring. It's almost like propaganda itself is kind of yawning, doing the odd armpit fart, and like thinking, I still get a reaction from the armpit fart. I mean, where are we here? You know what I'm saying? It's almost bored. I have the feeling that, and that's why I say the world is in a good place, because we're so awake to it now. So many people are awake to it. And you even get, there was even the other day on ABC, I just happened to be flicking around TV, like bizarre, and I saw on the kids station, ABC 2 Kids, had Michael Moore's 9/11 Fahrenheit movie.
Really?
On ABC 2 Kids in the evening. I thought, that's interesting. I guess maybe that was the only way they could get onto mainstream TV. And a brilliant movie, and I watched it, and I had a good giggle at the whole, you know, conspiracy thing again, because yeah, it's very clear. They hardly hit it that well, but it is it's almost a boring routine now, and I think that's a good sign, because many people, even a lot of mainstreamers, would agree that it's become a boring routine. That's so obvious, the fear that we're fed to keep us compliant, and I think of a lot of people really and I think as humans, you know, I often delve in and out. Like sometimes, as I'll say, I'll find out a few days later, or something big happened, just to delve in there, put my foot in the mainstream, you know, fear lake, and then pull it out again. And that's, you know, just to know what's going on. But it's just to recognize that, like, I think if people get really caught up in that suffering, then really, and once again, it does sound maybe cliche, but it is that, it means that they are suffering within them, and they're looking at their TV world to kind of enact their own suffering, but they don't see it that way. Once you choose not to be in suffering, once you choose, as you say, chasing nirvana, but really it is kind of true. It doesn't mean you're pulling out of the world, but by feeling just good, by tapping in to that the real charge of the universe, rather than the screen, you know, and feeling good, it's actually a good charge you're putting off. And it doesn't mean that you're necessarily an emu, you know, that you're burying your head in the sand. I think as long as you're aware of what's going on, I think a lot of people have got to realize if you are going that road for nirvana, it's good. But really for a true road of enlightenment, you do need both.
Mm. You need to see what... you can't understand it unless you do have both.
You've got to, and that's part of dualism, you know. And dualism, sure, it is the illusion, but we are in the illusion game here as well, you know. We're in the game of 3D. So, and people say, "Yeah, but what do you do?" It just means speaking the truth. It's like, but it happens naturally. It's not put on. It's like when I look at a lot of activists, they're very militant and very boom, you know, like saying, "Oh, don't, you know, we've got to look after the earth because, you know, we're terrible to the earth and we're killing it and don't do this and don't do that." And they're very negative. And I say, well, actually, the earth and myself and humanity are coexisting. We're kind of one of a kind. We actually are made of earth particles. I want the earth to be well because I want me to be well. I'm not being selfish. And they say, oh, forget about you. No, 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 no. Well, like the other day, the kid running over the plant was because on a certain level it hurt me. Because that's, I was sitting outside, I was really feeling plugged in, you know, to nature, whatever. It wasn't a stance. It wasn't a political or a militant kind of stance or some kind of ideology. And I think that's like a true environmentalist is someone who's actually truly self-serving as well on a true level. Like you want to be well. If you want to feel well, you want the earth to feel well too. It's not a separate thing. Once you make things separate, then you get emotive causes, all this kind of stuff, us and them mentality. The whole thing feeds back on itself and you get war. Any kind of war, it'll never work. Mm. It's an action reaction. You know, I mean, and as I said, I feel this more. I remember that's it. I remember as a kid doing a project on, what was it called? The global village. Remember, right, doing, you know, those big projects you do on the cardboard when I was in about grade 5. And it was about, you know, I think at that stage there were close to 4 billion people on the earth, and now 7, is it? I can't remember the numbers.
Yeah,
but
something like that, yeah, yep.
It was nothing. And I remember doing this project, and it was, you know, it's funny, I remember this specifically after an astral event. I remember doing this project, and oh, yeah, but it didn't really touch me, you know, about how we're affecting the planet and rainforests. And I did it, and it was, and I got a good project because I think it looked colourful, and I wasn't that neat, but I made a real big effort to be neat, you know. And some of my marks were good, and which is not a bad thing. But then years later, when I first zapped out from the planet, and I could see these red bands pulsating around the Earth, and it wasn't a belief. I knew that there was a stress being placed on the Earth by us. I knew that there was a stress, and it hit me. I thought, oh. Oh, well, we're connected to it. Like it was a visceral knowing rather than a teaching. But I mean, I understand teaching is important. I understand that. But most important is to experience, you know, so to know that we're not separate. So, you know, if I see an angry, whatever they're representing, that's not really the way to do it. It's just going to, anger will perpetuate anger, don't you think?
It comes into you attracting, like, so what's going to happen is, what I've noticed in recent years is you attract what you are. So you will attract those that are like-minded or have similar ideals and morals and ways they go about things as you do. And that's something that I've noticed. So basically, even though we're creating our reality, you attract those into your reality that are also like-minded.
Yeah, it's a self-feeding, a self-perpetuating mechanism. It's like an engine running on free energy, isn't it? It's almost like a magnetic field in that it runs on itself. That's right. And I think that I think you're absolutely right. I think your whole world kind of changes. So you've kind of got to. It is once again the juggling act of seeing what is out there, seeing what is happening, but being. And here's where the dualism, I mean, you're kind of separate to it in that you maintain your perfection, you maintain your sovereignty as a being. Mm-hmm. But by doing that, you actually interact with it on a fuller level. So it sounds like a cut now, but you're actually not. So by keeping that engine, if you like, running through your system, kind of this kind of bliss thing. And that's why so many schools are correct. Like this whole idea of being a blissful being is correct. And the whole idea of looking at things and conspiracy is correct. So in the end, it is all a coexistence, and just bringing it all in. And as you say, it's like that Taurus thing. It's like the spinning of a magnetic field that is constantly perpetuating itself. So once again, we get back to that original question where someone asked me, how do I kick the door down? You know, how do I kick the door? How do I get out of the situation of feeling that I'm strangled in my life or in my job? And it's just, I feel, to know that you are perfect, you know. But we're so insignificant, the scheme of things. Well, you're actually not, because, you know, when you go to sleep, when you go to bed at night, you can close and you can feel yourself, you know, connecting with the stars and getting bigger, and you feel that you are not just faking it, but you are the universe. You know, it's all within you, you know, this Akashic records, whatever you want to call it, all the information, all the realms, all the beings, it's all part of ourselves. We're all getting back to one being. We are a one being. So another really good mantra I used to say, because I was brought up Catholic, so I like to have conflict with that sometimes. I like to see where is the conflict within me. And I know this whole God thing is it's a word, oh, I can't use the word God. I think, well, use whatever word you want, but those who say they won't read something, or they won't read into something that is actually often a good thing to read, I'm not talking the Bible, because someone's mentioned the word God, you know. But I say, well, if you have a real issue with that, then you're actually deliberately not wanting to go further, because call it something else. Think of it as universal energy, whatever. But a really good mantra I say to I think to myself is, okay, everything that is looking out of my eyes, this is the experience I'm experiencing, basically through the eyes of God, if you like, or universal consciousness. So universal consciousness is now talking through us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I'm touching now, universal consciousness wants to experience. Therefore, my hands are the hands of God. I'll say the word God just for the hell of it.
Yeah, yeah.
My eyes, the eyes of God. Feeling shit this morning when I spoke to someone was the feeling shitness of God. So, you know, so every aspect of what I've experienced, of what I'm feeling, is actually God. And then I'd say, okay, so God is me. Therefore, I am God. Because I couldn't say I am God straight out, because I was brought up a Catholic. And there's still remnants of that. How dare you say I'm God? Because in a past life, in another life, we would have been stoned for saying that, mate. You couldn't say you were God. You were stoned. So I work my way to it. I'd say, okay, you know, these are the – and it would be logical to say these are the – you know, I'm the eyes of God, hands of God, heart of God, whatever. God is me, therefore I am God. And that, I found that was a really nice thing before I go to sleep sometimes, just to feel I am God. I am a perfect being. I'm a sovereign being. I am connected. I am it. I'm it. We're all it. Wow. And so you work your way there, whatever logical bridges you need. You know, I couldn't come out. Now I can, but I couldn't then come out and just say I'm God to myself. I had to work through it. So people have got to find, because mantras are nice little things. If you're saying it as you fall asleep, you often cross the logical borders, and you can use them to go astral as well, I found, because when you fall asleep while you're awake, your actually logical mind unravels, and then amazing things can happen, like levitation, all this sort of stuff, by taking intention through into sleep. So I've used that also to take mantras through. Like, so I will lie there at night and think, how do I feel? Is there some energy in me that's feeling a bit shitty about something? And I'll analyze what. Generally not, but sometimes I feel a little something. What happened to make me feel not whole? And I'll think, I'll look at that and work it out, and then I'll work it through and realize it's okay. I'm okay. What I did was okay today. What I said was okay. Or, you know, it is perfect because you're a perfect being talking like that. So I think it just really helps people. And that actually leads to kicking the door down, as I said before. That leads to getting out of the stranglehold and more realizing that you are not a victim. You are really not a victim. I know we coexist. I know it's a coexisting world. And I heard a great quote from some philosopher the other day from a few hundred years ago. He said, life is what you do with what is done to you. And of course, that can sound very victim-y. I kind of liked it. I laughed a bit at the time. Life is what you do with what is done to you, because we're all born into a circumstance. Let's face it. You know, we're in Oz here. We could have been born in an area that was far less materialistic, whatever. We would have had different things to deal with. But in the end, you've got to, yeah, look beyond your circumstance and you're okay, you know. And on another level, because we are connected, just by being in your integrity, you will want to serve others, because while others are feeling not one, while others feel that they the illusion of suffering, you want to help them through that. And it can be frustrating, because you see someone and it's so like the girl with the suicide thing. That was so easy. I didn't have to talk to her about it. We just had a laugh. And I know that something within her changed, because you could see that moment in her eyes when she realized she was okay. It was all gone, that part of her, you know. And it can be on very subtle levels, but we're all, as a being, we're wanting to heal ourselves, and therefore heal everyone on a certain level, aren't we?
Definitely. And yeah. I think when people look at things, they need to look at things of, in terms of how you're saying everyone's perfect. When they don't feel that, well, whose measuring cup are they using? Are they using what's put on them by their parents, their friends, their co-workers? Or are you being happy within and doing it from your own judgment? Though judgment, you know, we need to get rid of that in terms of who's right. There's always, you know, there's been this mentality projected on us of someone's got to be right. And if you're wrong, well, then everyone's got to point. I don't think it should be okay to be wrong. Yeah. But when that happens, everyone's just pointing the finger, and they've got to have a go at you, because that's been part of the programming with the whole reality.
Yeah, absolutely is. It's funny, that perfect thing. I remember a few years ago, I kind of once again, but isn't it funny that these realizations and this kind of path is so connected to the whole ET and interdimensional thing? I think that's interesting, isn't it? Because this idea that they are interacting with us because they're a part of us on the same story, different evolution, but I said to Mum years ago, I said, look, because she has chronic fatigue, she's had it for 25 years, and she's really brought up a Catholic and just can't get out of that, feels very much, you know, oh, we've sinned, you know, just being human, we're sinners. And I was telling her about my idea that we're perfect, and she said she'll try that meditation, and she came back. God love her. And she came back and she just said, look, I can't do it. It doesn't work. I feel mega tense. And I said, that's fair enough. I understand that. You know, she said, I can't be perfect. You know, I wasn't a perfect parent. Karma gave me chronic fatigue. I know a lot of good people who have died before me. Why am I still alive? You know, I'm in my 80s and I'm still alive even though I'm sick. And it's a hard one when you see your parent. And you realize, okay, my role at this stage of the life, she wants me to say, you're poor thing. And I'm very much against saying you're poor thing, because I don't want to. But I realize it gets to the point of, a lot of people feel this, it gets to the point when it's a real tricky one when it's in your family, you know. And you realize that it's not going to happen on a certain level, you know, that this person, you've got to just support them the way they are. But this whole paradigm of perfection, it's very much, it's learning to be non-judgmental with oneself. You know, I might have a day when I think, bugger it. I'll play this stupid tennis app on the iPad for a couple of hours. You know, absolute time wasting. And at the end of it, my head's burned. I think, good on you. Great stuff. That's okay.
It's called grounding.
It's called grounding. Well said. And I mean, you know, I just think that, but it has come from these astral experiences or being in the in the same space. I can't speak at the moment, but being in the space of some of these interdimensional beings, you're just flooded with these energies that really make you ponder. but more than ponder, because you're altered, but you just kind of know that we're just vast beings, you know, and when you're just tapping in occasionally to that source of real love, as you say, you just can't see yourself in any other way, you know. That's the most pivotal and primary experience, I think, through all of this ET connection and astral stuff, is that feeling that you are it, you know.
Yeah.
So positive.
No, definitely, definitely. What we'll do, we'll wrap it up on that note. I'd love to get you back on sometime. It's been awesome chatting to you again.
Chatting, Pete. Thank you.
Underneath this video, go to the description area, people. There's a link to the website, which is www.gregdoyleastral.com. So they can go and find all about you there. You do workshops and...
I also do consultations. I've had people recently want like a one-on-one Skype, you know, they're in another country or whatever, and I do like... you can see them on my website. So I do like consultations with them where I'll take them through one-on-one, because they can't always come to workshops here, you know. So, yeah, Reiki courses as well, and also astral courses and consultations. And
it's great Skype, because I get more clients from, you know, overseas than I do here. I get a lot here as well, but it's just great. Yeah.
What's fantastic.
That? Yeah.
It's true. True, so true.
Definitely, and Sol's got the same. Sol's busy, you know. She gets a lot of people coming to the house, but also on Skype as well. So it's just a great format. It just makes the world so small using Skype. It's just been fantastic.
Good use of technology, it really is. Yeah. That's a worthwhile use.
Definitely. All right, mate, we'll wrap it up there. Again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we've got to do it again soon, mate.
Pleasure, Pete. Thank you.
Thank you.